You're listening to Golf in the Northwest podcast on 1080thefan.com, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters.
The latest tips and equipment to improve your game. The latest from the leaderboards and your favorite courses. This is Golf in the Northwest, an action-packed hour about everything golf. Brought to you on The Fan by Laurelhurst Market and by Area Heating and Cooling. Now with award-winning PGA professional Harold Bluestein. Here's your host, Jason Swigard.
And a fine good morning to you all. Happy May. And as the Blazers season might be coming to an end rather quickly, everybody getting back out on the golf course.
I was a nervous wreck. I can't watch these games.
I've seen too many of them at this point where I just go quiet.
Well, I kept flipping back and forth to Caddyshack. So really, that kind of calmed me down because I grew up in that Caddyshack environment.
There you
so
go.
That calmed me down. And then I go back and I go, oh, my God, they're going to win. No, they're not going to lose. So I went back to Caddyshack.
I have to tell you, my favorite scene in Caddyshack, and I know you probably have yours because you are yourself a golfer, but the scene when they're on the boat and they are driving through and the fisherman looks and then does a double take. It's like, oh, crap. Jumps off.
His eyes got so wide with that thing coming. Yeah, that's great. God, there's so many good scenes in there. We don't want to go.
No, we could do the whole hour reciting that movie.
I think we should, as a matter of fact.
Well, we'll save that for when we have maybe not a major to discuss.
Right. Non-major.
Yeah, non-major. The John Deere Classic, maybe. We might be able to quote Caddyshack that Saturday. But no, we're packed today. Our buddy Jeff Shane going to join us at 8:15. We will talk about this PGA championship that Brooks Koepka has turned into his own personal quest here, setting records left and right.
Unbelievable.
7-shot lead here going into the weekend. Can anybody catch him? And how much is his performance resembling of what Tiger did back in 2000 and 2001? We'll discuss that. So he'll join us at 8:15. Steve Turcotte from Inside Golf Newspaper, going to join us at 8:45. Yeah, there are still newspapers being printed. I know it's a bit of a relic, but yeah, we'll ask him one about that. And two, in his first attempt to get tickets through the actual lottery to go to the Masters, he won them, got to go to the Masters this past year. It has been a bucket list. It still is a bucket list. It is like nothing else. Maybe in sports, it's just going back in time. And it's interesting because I want to contrast what he went through with the scene we saw. First hole, second round, Tiger hits it wayward.
That was great.
And
wasn't it?
It took him 20 minutes to move the damn New York Bethpage crowd because everybody had a cell phone trying to get the line for their video. So yeah,
well, that could have been a riot.
It almost was. Yeah. Tiger was over there and he's trying to move everybody back. They got New York City cops. You got golf course security. And it's on the first hole, so there's a massive gallery already.
Right.
And it took him 20 minutes to move everybody just so he could hit a damn shot out of the tall weeds.
Well, at least he could have done is hit the fairway.
He didn't hit the fairway at all yesterday.
No, I think he hit three fairways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not going to get you to the weekend.
No, it won't. He struggled. We'll talk a little bit more about Tiger's struggles.
We will. It's all about the PGA Championship, so let's start by going inside the ropes.
It's time for an insider's look at the leaderboards, the latest on all tours, plus local golf events and golf news. This is Inside the Ropes, part of Golf in the Northwest.
Oh, there is one other tour in action this week, the Web.com Tour. With the condensed schedule and with the Web.com Tour having to match up with the PGA Tour for the Web.com Finals, they're pretty much playing every week until we get to August. They are in Knoxville for the Knoxville Open. Fox Den Country Club, one of the longstanding stops on the Web.com Tour. Mark Hubbard is your leader at 12 under. Billy Kennerly at 11 under. Robbie Shelton, once again, we see him at the top of a leaderboard there at 10 under. Ryan Brehm, former Winco Foods Portland Open winner at 10 under. Scotty Harrington having a good week. He's at 6 under in the mix. Hopefully he can put one together. If he can get on the web.com, if you have one good tournament, you finish maybe top five, that will boost you right up there and get you in contention. And I know everybody rooting for Scotty, and hopefully he's in contention to get that PGA Tour card when he gets here to Portland.
Well, good luck to him. Mark Hubbard's really making a stand, though. He's got he posts 265s. Wet conditions. East Coast getting dumped on. A lot of rain out back there, so we're seeing it at Bethpage where they get a little bit of rain. They expected more, but I'll tell you, the Deep South's getting poured on, and it's been a problem for many of the tournaments this year. Softer conditions, but you've got rain delays and weather delays, all kinds of things.
Their rain usually comes with lightning, It's a bit more of a problem there than it is in the Pacific Northwest.
So he's got a chance to get his card for next season. So we'll see him
two wins
in August.
Yeah, two wins already on tour.
Yep.
Congratulations to Steve Stricker, who ran away with the region's tradition last week on the Champions Tour, getting their first major. He had a 6-shot victory. And when Stricker is focused and primed to play in a big event, we're used to seeing those results from him even when he was on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, except for the fact that he won 12 times and not one of them was a major. That's unfortunate for a guy that we really like. And what's not to like? It's like my mother said about me, what's not to like?
We don't have time for that.
Anyway, it was good to see Stricker. It was an emotional victory. He was pretty happy about it and well-deserved. He played very solidly. Did he play this week? I guess he did.
I don't know if he's at the PGA or not. We'll have to go looking down the leaderboard if he
Well, I know that Kang played, and Kang did very well last week, and he's back, within 20 shots of
He's at two under, is tied for 10th, but you're 10 shots back of Brooks Koepka.
Right.
As we get to the 101st PGA Championship, Bethpage Black, third major they've hosted here recently. The first two were U.S. Opens. Don't forget, the 2024 Ryder Cup will be at Bethpage Black, and boy, will that be fun. It'll be set up differently. They will have different holes. They're not going to stretch everything out, 7,400 plus yards. Well, they'll have some of the par fours being a little shorter. Maybe some of those long par fours will be par fives, but it'll be plenty of excitement for a Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it will be, but I'll tell you, if they shorten it up too much, it'll favor the Europeans because they hit a lot more fairways and they hit a lot more greens. So that could be a problem. Our best chance is to stretch it out, maybe move back into Brooklyn, and so you got a little longer golf course, and the U.S. might have a chance of winning.
Well, if Brooks Koepka keeps playing like this, he will be a shoe-in for that 2024 Ryder Cup team. 12 under par, a 128. That is the lowest stroke score in major history at 36 holes. Two shots better than Gary Woodland, Jordan Spieth, Martin Keimer, Brant Snedeker, and Nick Faldo, who all posted 130s in various majors, going back to the 92 Open for Faldo. It's the largest 36-hole lead in a major since World War II at 7 shots. He followed up with the best round after a score of 63 or better in the majors with a 5-under-65 in round two. He's also second on that list with a 4-under last year. So Brooks Koepka, earlier in the week at his press conference before the PGA, he was asked about, he's won 3 of the last 7 majors, why he's so successful in majors, and he said he doesn't see a reason why he can't win double-digit majors.
I don't blame him. The only one that didn't believe that he could is Brendel Chambly, and Chambly said he effectively gave him the finger
for 4.5 hours. That's a great quote.
Yeah, that is good. And Brendel, I've been giving you the finger for 3 weeks, so 4.5 hours is hardly enough for you. And I think Brooks Koepka, we're talking about stats and records and things like that. And I heard one this morning on the radio coming in that it was like the best 36-hole score in 159 years or something. I don't know where they got that. But I can tell you, if he wins this, he will be the only player in history to win, go back-to-back in a U.S. Open and a PGA Championship. And I think that is really an incredible statistic. This guy could easily go double-digit majors, except for the fact that this is golf, and we just don't know what's going to happen. So
that's true. But he certainly has all the makeup, and especially on the toughest courses, you see his advantage in length and accuracy, and now he's got his putting, you know, dialed in as well.
Absolutely.
The only question is, why hasn't he won more regular tour events?
I don't know if he gets himself up for them. He may, going in, he was a real fan of Tiger Woods. And so if you're a fan of Tiger Woods, you're looking at majors. So Tiger made majors the big deal, and everything else was just a warm-up to a major. And I think Brooks Koepka has taken that to heart, and he's saying, if I'm going to be recognized as a great player, I got to win some majors. And I want to try and outdo my my hero here. So I think he's got a way of getting up for them or preparing for them, where other players would love to know what he's thinking and doing, particularly his good buddy Dustin Johnson. He'd like to know, what is Brooks doing that I'm not doing? And we don't know. Brooks has got some magic formula for preparing for majors. He is hitting the ball a mile, but he's also hitting those fairways.
Yeah, it's nice to see to a major course where, you know, if you don't hit it in the fairway, you're going to be penalized. I mean, that rough is ridiculous. The rain made it even thicker and more dense. I would like to see more regular tour events where there's penalties like that. If you can keep it straight down the fairway, hit fairways and greens, you can have a ridiculous score like Brooks Koepka. But if you hit it sideways, then you're going to have to scramble hard to make par, and you're most likely going to make a bogey.
Yeah, it's all about the PGA wants to identify the best players. They don't want to penalize the field. A little different outlook from the USGA. They're out to screw everybody out there, where the PGA is just saying, we want to identify the best player this week. And so I don't know whether the players would be very happy if every week it was set up like this particular tournament. I know what you're saying. It would be more entertaining, and you would see, you would put a lot of pressure on players to do better. But the pressure that takes, the energy it takes week in and week out, they would rather see themselves be able to shoot 21 under than 4 under. And so is that more entertaining? I'll ask you, is that more entertaining to see a 21 under? Is it more entertaining to see guys trying to get out of the weeds?
Well, not when there's, you know, if the cut number is going to be 8 or 9 under par, then no. If everybody's just firing it at pins and it looks like pitch and putt, then no. I mean, you want to see these guys use the skills that have allowed them to become the best golfers in the world. And if you hit it sideways, then there's got to be consequences for that.
Well, I would agree entirely. And we talked with Peter Jacobson a couple of weeks ago, and he said you don't necessarily have to keep lengthening golf courses.
Narrow the fairways,
build the rough up, and I wouldn't mind seeing that happen more often. That would challenge the players without beating them up too badly.
Yeah. So that's but enough of beating up Brooks Koepka. He's got a 7-shot lead. Jordan Spieth, Adam Scott, a 5-under. Daniel Berger, Dustin Johnson, Kelly Kraft, Matt Wallace, Luke List at 4-under. Justin Rose at 3-under. I don't see anybody past that having a real shot to deal with Brooks unless he stumbles in round 3 and brings himself back to the field.
I thought Molinari would win the Masters. So, you know,
true.
And he didn't. I mean, the fact is, we all know who did win the Masters.
Well, I don't think there's as much on this course. We're going to talk to Jeff Shane coming up here in just a moment. But this course is just, it's all right there out in front of you.
Yeah.
You know exactly what you got to do. If you can get it on the green in regulation, these greens aren't tricky.
No, they're flat. Fairly flat.
And the softness, the rain that they've had over the last couple of weeks has kept them pretty receptive, so you can hit long irons in and they will hold, which is giving them shots to make a lot of pars.
Right. Yeah. And the amazing thing about Bethpage Black is that it's a public golf course.
I know.
So, I mean, anybody can play it. They call it the what is it? The Working Man's Country Club?
Working Man's Country Club.
Yeah,
indeed.
It's a great golf course. I don't know if they let anybody play it, though.
Well, I think they find you might have to have a handicap or something. They might check handicap indexes. That's one way they could.
Well, you've got plenty of handicap. They should let you.
Plenty
get
of
out
handicap.
There.
We were joking about that. It's like, what would I shoot at this? And I'd be like, par for me would probably be 125. And I would struggle to get there.
I would be happy to break 100 from the forward tees. That would be fun. Just to play it. It looks like a good venue for watching golf. So I think the New York fans, they're loud. You know,
they're loud. They like to get lubed up, and they like their cell phones.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's amazing. It borderlined on the waste management tournament. You know, with the excitement.
Yep.
So it's fun.
Which is why the Ryder Cup's going to be fantastic there in 2024. New York fans are going to let those Euros have it.
I think I might have to go to that.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll make it a date.
In Long Island. Long Island.
You can, teach me all about
I have some fraternity brothers who live in Long Island.
There we go.
Yeah.
We'll do that. All right. When we come back, our buddy Jeff Shane, kind enough to join us here. Some more on the PGA Championship. We're just getting going here. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan. Welcome back in here. A little more spring-like Northwest May morning, but weather's still decent to get out there. It'll be cool. So if it was a little hot last weekend for you, maybe a few raindrops to dodge, but certainly nothing to keep you from getting out and hitting the course. And now, though, it's time to welcome back good friend of the show, Jeff Shane, on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline. You can read his work at PGA.com. A great article at Morning Read last week that we're going to get to. He's also got his podcast that he does for the Golf Insiders, golfinsiders.com. Easiest way is just follow him at Jeff Shane, S-H-A-I-N, on Twitter. Good morning, my friend. How are you doing?
Doing well. I suppose this might be a good day to actually go play golf because there won't be a heck of a lot to watch.
Yeah, no kidding. A 36 hole low score for Brooks Koepka at the PGA Championship on arguably one of the most difficult courses majors have seen due to the length and due to that rough, which is ridiculous. And so if you're not in the fairway, you have no chance. If you're not 300 plus yards off the tee, seemingly every hole, you don't have much of a chance. He's got a 7-shot lead. There are some big names there in Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson that might have a chance to hunt him down. What kind of chances do you give one of those big names that's won a major before?
I think it depends on whether Brooks Koepka gets food poisoning or something of that nature. This is as dominant a performance, at least through 36 holes. And, you know, if you want to call me back tomorrow, we can choose to revise, I suppose. But this is as dominant a performance, really, as the 2000 U.S. Open. It just seems like Brooks Koepka is playing a different course. You want to ask him, all right, which hole did you skip? Because he is playing it. He's just this week is far and away in front of everybody else. I mean, you take him out of the equation, and by the way, if you are into such things, you can bet on who's going to win the B flight. If you take Brooks out of the equation, it's a really competitive, good looking field with Spieth and Scott and DJ. But when you have to make up 7 shots on a course like Bethpage Black, I just, you know, it really requires Brooks Koepka coming back. And he would have to drop pretty precipitously. I guess I didn't answer your question, but Dustin Johnson has the length, but does he have the ability to make up 8 shots? That's hard.
Well, so Jeff, we're talking about Bethpage Black being so difficult, and yet these guys are making it look
they are shooting
easy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other thing that kind of struck me this morning as I looked at that leaderboard again, is there are a lot of numbers in the 60s. And I think that probably has to do a certain amount with all the wet weather that they had last week. You're not getting a ton of roll, so those offline tee shots are not rolling into the rough necessarily so much. But it's going to take probably a PGA championship record you know, at 62, certainly at 63, to try and put yourself back into that sort of contention. And, you know, even a guy like Adam Scott, who looked like he might be on 62 watch, still was not able to negotiate those final three holes, which were all gettable holes. Actually take aim at that mark. He wound up playing the last three and one over. So, you've got to have it all together. And, just looking at the betting odds right now, if you want to win $100 on Brooks Koepka, you got to bet 400.
Well, like you said, Adam Scott came very close. He didn't think 62 was a reasonable score going out when he was asked about it. And yet he missed three putts within 7 feet. This guy could have shot 61 and broken a record. He has the length, but his putter's a little balky.
Always been.
Yeah.
And that's been the story of Adam Scott's career. He, you know, think of the wins that he could have had, you know, and specifically, you know, Royal Lithium in 2012 comes to mind. Mm-hmm. You know, if that thing hadn't been a snake in his hands. His putting has always held him back from being maybe of that of the caliber of a Koepka or a Dustin Johnson or you know, somebody that you know, he's got a decent win total. I don't have it in front of me, but you know, you think he could have 1.5 times, maybe double that, if he could putt better.
Jeff Shane, our guest here. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Shane, S-H-A-I-N. And you mentioned about all the what-ifs and runner-up from Adam Scott's career. I really enjoyed an article I read from you on the Morning Read. It was last week as we were looking at Bethpage Black. It's been 10 years since they last hosted a major. And in that year of 2009, it was all about the almosts and the what-ifs in terms of the four majors and maybe the four most unassuming major winners in a single year. With that, it was, you know, Phil Mickelson coming up short again at the U.S. Open. The only time Tiger Woods has really been run down, Wai Yang got him at the PGA. You had Kenny Perry blowing it at the Masters and Angel Cabrera winning a playoff there. Do you think we'll ever see another year like that? Or with all of the young talent and the way that guys are names now, seemingly we get one or two every year, some college stud, some big phenom amateur that we already know as a brand before he gets to the PGA Tour. Can we ever have a year like 2009 again?
You know, I think it would be tough. And that's why I think that story idea stuck with me is, kind of like you, I was looking at, well, what happened last time they had a major at Bethpage? Oh, yeah, Lucas Glover won, and then my mind started wandering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the year that Tom Watson got pipped at the very end. Yeah, and that was the year Tiger, you know, and I actually had a discussion with my podcast host over at Prime Sports Network, and it was just, you know, that was a year that you always left feeling like, you felt like you got cheated almost as a fan. You wanted a great story, and we couldn't write a great story in any one of those majors that year. And so that's kind of the genesis of that. But I think you're right with the depth of talent that we have, and the name recognition, and you know the following that golf fans have. I mean, you don't have to be Koepka or Johnson or Spieth or Tiger. I'm not talking about limiting your storylines just to, you know, those top 5, 6, 8 guys. I mean, we know who Tommy Fleetwood is. It'd be a great story if he won. We know who Jason Day is. It was a great story in 2015. After all of his back issues, it would be a great story again. But to have four guys come out of relatively nowhere, even though Glover and Sink were players, and to beat who they did, fashion that they did, you know, on the venue that they did. Let's hope it doesn't ever happen again, honestly.
Yeah, you're talking about near misses, and I'm looking here at Dustin Johnson, who's another guy who's had some near misses, and I'm wondering, what does it take? This guy seems to have all the tools. And I read an article this morning that said, well, maybe he needs to get angrier. Well, getting angry doesn't always make you a better player. It may relieve some pressure, but it doesn't make you a better player. Winning majors is just plain difficult, and Johnson just doesn't seem to be able to get over that hump.
Yeah, and maybe it's not anger that Dustin Johnson needs. He needs to be more resolute. He needs to be more, kind of inner, I'll show you. Remember that the major that he won, he was actually facing down some adversity because there was a question of whether he was going to get a penalty or not at Oakmont. And that almost seemed to, stiffen his spine a little bit and say, hey, this is not going to be taken away from me. And he went out and won it so that there was no doubt. Apply the penalty. I don't care. I'm still taking the trophy home. If he can somehow channel that from that Sunday at Oakmont, maybe he does get himself into better position at some of these majors. He should contend at Pebble Beach. He's a former winner there. 4-hole lead last time the U.S. Open was at Pebble Beach, and then he had the spectacularly bad 82 where he gave the entire lead away in the first two holes. I think it's not anger. I think it's stiffening his spine, so to speak, being a little bit more resolute and saying, I don't care what anybody says, this major is mine.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping things up here with Jeff Shane. So Brooks Koepka starts the day with a 7-shot lead. He's playing with Jordan Spieth. He's got Adam Scott in the group behind him, Dustin Johnson, two groups back. How far or how close does somebody need to be to Brooks after today to make it interesting on Sunday?
I think you got to cut it in half. I think a 4-shot lead, maybe you can, maybe under the right circumstances, again, if Brooks stumbles, you can be there to step in. Certainly 3 would make it interesting. I think if you're 5 back, you're going to be forced into a position where you're going to have to fire at some pins that you don't want to fire at. And you can't be perfect when you do that. You're going to make some bogeys, and you just hope that you make more birdies than bogeys in that situation. But I think this lead has to be cut almost in half to really put yourself in a position to try to chase him down on Sunday. And even in that situation, you're not chasing him down. You're not going out two groups ahead and putting up a score and making everybody in the gallery go, ooh. You're going to be standing right there with him, and you're almost going to be taunting Brooks Koepka. Come on, do what you're supposed to do. And so far, Brooks has shown that he can do that.
Well, we'll see if it'll be interesting on Sunday or a coronation, and Brooks Koepka starting to fulfill his comments about winning double-digit majors. Should be an interesting weekend at Bethpage.
Here's the question. Is the way he's playing, does he get to take that sign home too? Because it's going to be completely obliterated by him.
I would think so. He certainly should hold up a scorecard as 63 next to it. I'm sure there's a picture on somewhere out on social media. I would certainly 63 standing next to the black diamond sign there at Bethpage. That would be one to go next to the trophy. So Jeff Shane, our guest, you can follow him online, Twitter at Jeff Shane, Shain. He's got work all over the place covering the PGA tours. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, and enjoy the rest of the PGA championship.
We shall enjoy your weekend as well.
We will. Thanks so much to Jeff Shane there for joining us. And we want to go long with him there. So we'll quickly make the turn here when we come back. Time to ask the pro. We'll ask Harold, once you've got a decent swing, a repeatable swing, you can make constant contact with the golf ball. Then how do you start going about practicing or developing adding length to your swing? Once you're a proficient swinger of the golf club and you're not learning anymore how to make consistent contact, is there a way to get more out of the swing and the distance off the tee the way Brooks Koepka does without taking a needle? We'll ask him as we make the turn here. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Tips for your game from award-winning PGA instructor Harold Bluestein. It's time to Ask the Pro on Golf in the Northwest. Brought to you on The Fan by Laurelhurst Market.
Jason Swigart, Harold Bluestein, 835 here, Center and Saint following us. Then we've got some Major League Baseball, Phillies and Rockies for you at 1230. Ducks baseball will be over on 9:10. And then tomorrow it'll be game three of the Eastern Conference Finals. Again, due to the NBA blackout restrictions, we're unable to air ESPN Radio's call of the Blazers and the Warriors. Damn Warriors. Game three tonight. That'll be 6 o'clock. You can see it on ESPN if you don't have a ticket. So plenty of time to get out there and get around in before getting home and settling in for the Blazers and the Warriors. And so much discussion about what Brooks Koepka is doing to Bethpage Black, hitting it just a mile off the tee, but the accuracy and then his ability to have, you know, three less clubs when he's hitting his approach shots there to the greens. But for people that don't look like outside linebackers, hitting it far is everybody wants distance. They're looking at that's, you know, the technology that's gone into the metals and stuff that are used in clubs, the golf ball itself. But once you have become a proficient enough golfer that your swing is repeatable, you're making constant, all those, you're not a novice anymore. You know what you're doing when you go out there. Is there a way to go about developing within yourself more, getting more distance off the tee?
Well, I would say, first of all, there's a little bit of a, you're off a little bit. Oh. If you've got a good swing, you're getting the maximum distance from your body.
Okay.
But that being said, there are some things that you can do. But I would say the first thing, you've got to understand a club head speed produces distance. So for every 1 mile per hour or something, it's like 3 yards. So you've got to build up club head speed. Most players, amateurs, their average club head speed is about 93 miles an hour. And their carry is only a little over 200 yards. So they definitely want to get it out there further. So let's speak of the swing first. First of all, you got to learn how to set up to the ball properly. And most players do not set up with a significant enough upper body or spine angle tilt, which is if you were to stand up straight and just tilt to the right, if you're a right-handed player, you're going to have about 10 degrees of tilt. Most players are getting up there with their shoulders are fairly level, or they just kind of lower their right shoulder so they can get the right hand on the club. There is a tilt that's involved. With the tilt, you can move into your backswing and get your pressure into your right foot. Most players do not get that pressure into the right foot because their right hip sliding sideways. So you're a perfect example of that guy who slides sideways. So you've got to learn that first. Then you have to learn how to get over to the left side. I would say if you want a quick, you know, a couple of quick fixes. Number one, find a driver that fits you. So, and I would say you take advantage of every demo day in the city and go hit drivers and find one. And it's not necessarily the head, it's the shaft. Find a shaft that really works for you. So now you're going to set up better with a little better tilt. You got a driver in your hand. That's good. Tee the ball a little higher. Oftentimes we hear, well, we're going to hit it further if we get the ball rolling. Yeah, that works if you're playing at the Portland Airport, but you're not. If you want the ball to go further, you're going to have to get the right launch angle, which is about 11, 12 degrees. You're going to have to get a lot of carry. Ball in the air has less resistance when it comes to air impacting the golf ball as opposed to the ground impacting the golf ball. Nice to see things bounce, but if you're only carrying at 200 yards, you're not going to get more than about 30 yards more. So now you're only at 230. But if your carry can go up to 230, now you're hitting a 260, 270. That's a big difference. So we talk, again, I want to drop back into the swing itself. So most players have they're trying to get to their left side, and what do? Their upper body goes too far forward to the left side. So they're not staying back on the ball long enough. So we're going to tee it higher, set that tilt, and we're going to try and maintain that tilt a little bit better when we swing through. So it comes down to the fact that you get greater distance from the ground up. So right now I'm working with Blaine Seitz at Mobilitas, and he's working on activating my glutes, which sounds silly at age 70 to be able to activate. We're actually talking about reactivating the glutes.
True. And do you still have glutes?
I got glutes. Oh, and they're getting tight.
Oh,
yeah.
Uh-oh. Look out, folks.
We had a check last night, and Susie said, yes, they're tightening up.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's some soft spots still, but we're working on it. So I had to work on my pelvis tilt, which is like I had an S-curve in my small in my back, and getting exercising your lower body. And it's not just the abs in the front. It's not about a six-pack. It's about your hamstrings, your quads, and your glutes, those muscles in your butt. And I would say go online. There's a lot of people that will give you exercises. Blaine Seitz out in Hillsboro, Mobilitas, call him, get in with him, and build up that lower muscle, the lower body. Some you'll hear all the time, if you want to hit it further, you got to spin your hips further, faster. Not true. You got to stabilize the lower body. And this is where players get into trouble, and myself included. Our lower body spins too quickly. So consequently, that good energy we pick enough from the ground is not translating up through the core, out through the arms, and out through the club head. So if you want to hit the ball further, learn how to get greater club head speed by stabilizing the lower body.
There you go. You can follow more haroldbluestein.com, and you can find Harold's got great stuff on his website, and there's links, there's all sorts of fun stuff. Plus, you can go buy his book because
please do.
We need to get Harold's book moving. Great Father's Day gift, by the way.
Yeah, and perfect, it's actually doing quite well on Amazon. So we're
there.
We're
you pleased. Go.
And it's a Kindle now too. So
oh, perfect.
Yeah, you got all in. I know you're going to get an account on Amazon one of these days.
No, I'm trying to avoid it. I don't. They need to start shipping booze. When they ship booze, then I'm on Amazon.
Let me give you a hint. 21st century, this is the way things are done now. Okay.
And Swag, the idea of booze being kind of your compass for online shopping, that's some reevaluation time for you.
I think there's an intervention in this future.
No, it's not quantity, it's quality. I'm looking for specific items that I can't find everywhere.
Yes,
so.
The quality number of booze that you can get.
Yeah, exactly. All right, when we come back, Steve Turcotte, editor for Inside Golf, a newspaper, going to join us. Recently won the ticket lottery, was out at Augusta. So we'll find out about that experience as well as some other fun stuff going on with golf in the Northwest as we come down the stretch. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Which new driver is best for your game? Who makes the best golf gear? Where should you take your next golf vacation? Which local course should you get to know better? This is the business of golf every week on Golf in the Northwest. Brought to you on The Fan by Area Heating and Cooling.
Back here, 8:46 this morning, wrapping things up for another edition of Golf in the Northwest. Jason Swigard with Harold Bluestein, Center and Saint, coming up next, and they will prime you for tonight's Game 3 between the Blazers and the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. But very pleased to be having, joining us now on the line, the MVP HomeLoans.com Guild Hotline, is Steve Turcotte, editor for Inside Golf Newspaper. You can also follow it online, Inside Golf online.com. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys.
Well, we saw, I know Harold's been doing the cartoon for you here for a couple of decades in this newspaper. And yes, there's still an actual newspaper that gets printed. I know they're relics these days, but sometimes we like nostalgia. And so, but you recently, the article there recently won the ticket lottery to get to go back to Augusta practice rounds for the Masters. And I think maybe people have gotten to the point where they just think the only way to get those tickets is by paying four or five figures online, that the badges are all spoken for before they ever go on sale to the public.
Well, I got lucky. I heard about the lottery. I'd never done it before, and I did it last year. And, you know, threw my name in the lottery, and all of a sudden, a couple months later, here comes an email from the Masters. I go, why is the Masters sending me an email? And I look, congratulations, you've been picked for two practice round tickets for Monday. I go, well, that's okay. I'm sure a zillion other people get it. So I go up to my golf course a couple of days later, and the guy's just absolutely fuming at me. He's going, I've been trying this for 20 years. I've never been picked. So I called my buddy. I go, I just got Willy Wonka golden tickets. We're going to Augusta.
That's fantastic. So you got a chance to go. I get as a PGA member, I get a free ticket if I want to go, and I just haven't gone yet. I will someday, based on your recommendation. What impressed you the most about Augusta National, the golf course?
Well, I've got a couple of reporter friends who've gone, and they've told me for years that the TV does no justice when it comes to what the terrain is like, and you kind of go, okay. So our goal was to go start on the one tee box, walk the entire course. I'm telling you, TV does not do that thing justice. It is so hilly. There's like one flat spot on the course, number 12 down in Amen Corner. That is the hilliest place I've ever seen in my life.
Well, and I know it's one of the few, normally a lot of places practice rounds are either a nominal fee or you can just come out and watch the guys practice, as opposed to the Masters where, you really need to get tickets. The place is full. What, though, is unique about the Masters practice rounds? Obviously, once the tournament's going on, everybody's, very quiet, very respectful and letting the tournament go. But is there a little bit more give and take maybe with the players and a little bit more access? Are they acknowledging the patrons, as it were? And if you do get the chance to win the lottery, is the practice rounds worth going to?
I didn't know when we got it, but man, I tell you, it was way worth it. It's funny, the couple of things you get there when you first get there is that A, no running, and B, no sitting on the grass, which I thought was like, okay, whatever. So I thought that was kind of funny. But the practice round, I've been to the waste management tournament about 5-6 years in a row. We go every year, and that's just, we sit on 16, and that's just completely out of hand. There's a practice round, people are respectful, and they're just, somebody does something kind of cool. And the coolest thing we saw, we're sitting on number 15, the par 5, and Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy are playing together, and they're going for the green. They both miss the green, and then Dustin throws another ball down, and then he makes a mulligan albatross, which he thought was pretty cool, and people just went nuts, really loud and stuff. And then they walk over to 16, and in the practice rounds, you probably see it on TV in the highlights, they try and skip the ball across the pond there on 16. That was really entertaining, too, and people really liked that.
Was there anyone there in the players that you watched that really stood out for you personally?
We got there right when Tiger was kind of finishing up his deal. But, this is a Monday, so you'd think maybe there wouldn't be a whole lot of people out there. But there was a lot of guys that were practicing, and there were thousands of people there on the practice round. It was amazing. It's kind of funny when you watch, the practice round for the PGA this week, that they were talking about, hey, there's nobody out here for the practice rounds. But Augusta, it was thousands of people all over the place. It was amazing.
Chatting here with Steve Turcotte, editor for Inside Golf and Newspaper. You can follow it online, insidegolfnewspaper.com. And for those maybe unfamiliar with the publication, you guys have been doing this for a long, long time. Let everybody know kind of how you came to be, and obviously a Northwest focus with the publication as well.
It's funny you talk about newspaper. I've been a newspaper guy ever since I graduated from Oregon, but I still get newspapers, and I'm still a newspaper guy. I know there's a place for online stuff, but we've been over 30 years. Harold's been with us for a long time, and we're the only golf publication with free distribution at golf courses and driving ranges in Oregon, Washington, and we basically try to cover just about everything. In fact, one thing we did this last month was Chambers Bay was closed for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I got a chance to go play the new greens a couple weeks ago, and they were good, and they're going to be unbelievable when they're all finished. So hopefully that leads to bigger and better things for another U.S. Open down the road for those guys.
Well, yeah, speaking of Chambers Bay, their goal was to do what the USGA would like him to bring another U.S. Open. Sahali, I can't remember how long ago it was up there that hosted the PGA, but what outside of Chambers, is there other prospects to bring majors, either a PGA or a U.S. Open here to the Pacific, closer? I know they're going back to Pebble. I think the Olympic Club might be back in the rotation or somewhere in the Bay Area. But to get to the Pacific Northwest, is there anything on the horizon outside of Chambers that could possibly do it?
Nah, that would be the only place. They're taking, they were told, here's what you guys need to do, and they're taking those steps, which is great. You can tell the new greens are going to be fantastic when they're rolled out. So they're hosting the USGA four ball next year, which would be a real big test and see how the USGA likes what the greens are coming. But US Opens are all scheduled way out in advance. But it'd be nice to see one more chance at Chambers Bay, wouldn't it? Do you guys get a chance to get up here and see that?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we had a couple of guys from the station here that were able to get up there, and certainly if it comes back, we'll make every plan to be up there for it. And us being down in Oregon, obviously Bandon Dunes is hosting a wealth of USGA events, but a lot of smaller stuff that doesn't bring in the crowds. I've thought that that would be a perfect venue for a Ryder Cup somewhere in the future, but it's so remote and there's not much infrastructure around it. I'd love to see that thing built up and have something out there that could showcase it and see the best players in the world on those courses.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I've been to a Kiawah Island a couple times to play the Ocean Course where they had the Ryder Cup, you know, back in the was the early 90s. And that was, you know, at that time, that was really remote and that wasn't really built up. I mean, it's pretty built up now, but it'd be really cool to see, you know, something like a Ryder Cup or like that at Bandon Dunes, wouldn't it?
Boy, that would be great. Sometimes we're a little starved here in the Northwest for the tour. But you cover not just the professional events. I talked to you last week, and you were on your way to a college tournament. Which one was that?
Apparently I'm wearing many hats, Harold. It's kind of funny. I'm coaching the Highline College women's golf team. We started the program 3 years ago. It's, you know, part of the NWAC conference with all the community colleges in the Northwest. There's about 12 or 13 teams that play golf. We went down to we had one round at Tokatee, just kind of a fun little deal for three or four teams, which is, you know, my old haunt when I was going to Eugene. That's always an awesome course. And then we went down and played Bandon Crossings in a two-day tournament. I'd never had a chance to play Crossings. And if you guys have, you missed it. It was fantastic. I was absolutely impressed how good that place was.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I played it when it first opened up. And I think that's a Dan Hixon.
That is Dan Hixon, yes.
Yeah, he's done a great job with Wine Valley and Bandon Crossing. So I'm going to put you on the spot here and say, if you had to play a golf course on a nice sunny day, 75, which one in the Northwest would you play?
Seriously, on the spot.
Well, we'll let you off the spot. What's your preference right now? Where are you dying to play?
You know, I played it, and it's great. When I first played, it was one of my favorites. It still sticks out. Gamble Sands. If you guys had a chance to play Gamble Sands, they just hosted a U.S. Open qualifier last week up there. But it's, you know, it's so remote. But their plans are to, you know, be a resort. They want to build another course and, you know, turn their place into a resort. So it should be pretty cool.
There you go. Steve Turcott, editor for Inside Golf Newspaper. You can find it online, insidegolfnewspaper.com, and find out how to get a subscription there. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Enjoy the golf this weekend. We'll hopefully catch up with you down the road.
Guys, hey, thanks a lot.
There you go. Steve Turcott with Inside Golf Newspaper. Thanks once again to Jeff Shane, our buddy, for joining us. Brooks Koepka's got a 7-shot lead starting play today. He'll tee off at 11:50, playing with Spieth. You've got Dustin Johnson in the mix as well, but not too many guys. Nobody's really going low early this morning. Adam Scott at 5-under, Spieth at 5-under. So can Koepka just run away with this, or will he fall back to the field? That's a big question.
Well, it's a tough one unless you're Greg Norman. You know, going into this tournament, they were saying that probably 8-under would win it because Bethpage Black is so difficult.
Brooks is flirting with 20-under. That's ridiculous.
It is absurd. He would have to come back a long ways. He didn't hit it that good. He complained about how he hit it yesterday. And so I think Brooks Koepka is an odds-on favorite to win.
Thanks to Will Darkins, our producer, as always, Center and Saint. Up next for Harold, I'm Jason. Hit him straight.
Susie said yes. They're tightening up.